All right, welcome back. More of the Connor Amper Show. You're on 1620 The Zone and on 1620thezone.com. Another look back from the Creighton win to get them to the Sweet 16 the other night. So just had a couple quick chats with some guys in the locker room after the game, get some initial reactions. How do you feel going to Detroit next weekend? What do you like about Detroit? No, I didn't ask, what do you like about Detroit? What do you know about Detroit?
RoboCop.
But I could have. I could have made a cool video out of it, really. You know, I could have brought my tiny baby mic. That would have been awesome. But instead, I just
asked sports questions.
And so without further ado, let's hear from a few of the Jays from after the game the other night. This is, Josh, this is the only chance we're ever going to get to say this. This is exclusive audio.
I'm really proud
of you. Nobody else has this. Did you get any? Josh, you were credentialed at these events.
I was.
Where is your exclusive audio? What were you doing? Did you go into the locker room with the sweaty men?
No.
Why not?
I didn't. What?
You're too good. You had to look too good for TV.
Well, that definitely. I didn't want to miss
you. Didn't
my
want
spot.
To talk to Terrence Shannon and ask him some questions.
You know,
about some things.
It was really interesting. After each Illinois game, the CBS affiliate or whatever, whoever, True TV, I believe, was broadcasting a lot of the games, TNT on Saturday night. Illinois Radio and Westwood One each had a different representative from Illinois. None of those representatives were Terrence Shannon Jr. I wonder why.
I wonder. But if you would have went to the locker room, he would have been sitting there and available.
So, you dropped 30. What's that like?
It's just, yeah.
A lot of people chanting no means no when you were at the free throw line.
Did you hear that?
Did you hear that?
What did you think of that? What do you think that meant? I don't know.
Warranted chant or
like,
not?
What if you didn't know what if you were new to the deal and you didn't know the backstory on him from this year? Like, you just asked him the question. Did you hear that chant? What do you think they were doing that? Well, why was that?
Hey, Daddy, what are they chanting at that man?
Yeah, maybe they do that. They put the kid reporter in there. And they're like,
what were they yelling at you?
Were they yelling at you?
I took this interview because I thought it would be safe.
There's no safety. All right, here is Baylor Shireman after Creighton's win to get them to the Sweet 16 on Saturday night. Here's Baylor
Shireman.
Here in
the locker with Baylor Shireman post-game. Baylor, two overtimes it took to get to the Sweet 16. How's it feel?
Feels good, man. I mean, obviously, you know, would like to get it done in regulation like anything else. But at the end of the day, just really proud of the team, how they fought back. You know, there was times throughout the game where it could have got away from us, and we stayed the process. Just really happy, like I said, for everybody.
I mean, the second half, it is starting to get away a little bit. It's 58-52,
yep.
Steven hit a big three. Like, what were those moments like? When it kind of was slipping there?
Yeah, well, I mean, we just have to stay process-oriented and just take it one play at a time. You know, you're not going to get it all back in one play, and I think we did a really good job of that, getting stops and then getting good looks.
What were some of the things you did on Cousinard in the second half?
Just try to make everything difficult. You know, obviously he's a tremendous player and makes difficult shots, and, you know, just, like I said, try to make things difficult, and then we switched up ball screen coverages in the overtimes, which I think really threw him off, too.
A couple big free throws late. Like, every single person, it felt like, did something clutch. Like, what does that speak to about this team?
I mean, I think that shows how much we trust one another to make big plays, and then how many people we have that can make big plays. And like we said from the jump, this is a special team that, you know, really bonds, and the chemistry is one of the best that I've been a part of. So
it doesn't feel like you guys are looking around waiting for somebody to do something, yeah. Because you kind of understand that somebody is going to do something eventually.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have a lot of weapons on this team, and we all know that, and we're all looking for each other.
Hey, how about Kalkbrenner? Like, I mean, we watch him. We sit there and watch him after practice, and he plays a three-game with Steven and everything.
Exactly.
That's his spot.
Exactly.
Like, so what were you thinking as he rises up?
I mean, like you said, he practices that shot all the time, even though he doesn't shoot a lot during the games. And so, you know, we have full confidence in Kalkbrenner, whatever he does. So it was just a big-time shot by him.
Baylor, congrats, man.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
I weirdly felt really good about that shot going in.
It was an open look.
When he got the idea that he was going to do it, he was like, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I kind of felt good about it. And I'll reference this in an interview, in one of the other interviews that we do, that we'll have with Steven here coming up in a second. But like, they do this game, and I've talked about this before, at the end of practice, every time that I've been there, where it'll be Steven Ashworth, Trey Alexander, Francisco Farabello, and Ryan Kalkbrenner. And they'll play this game where they go around the three-point line and they'll shoot. They have to make three at each spot. It's like around the world, three at each spot, and then go back and do two, and then go back and do one. And it's a really hard game for Ryan Kalkbrenner. Now, most of the time he gets killed because he can't get out of the corner. Ashworth destroys everybody in this game every single time that I've watched it, which is amazing because the guy has so many open looks in games and, you know, he's only shooting, 31 or 32% from three right now, and it feels like they're all pretty dang good looks. You got to think there's still another explosive game from him, even though he made five in the game on Saturday. But they go around, and Kalkbrenner wants to challenge himself, and he wants to get in there. And every once in a while, he'll get hot. But he'll get hot from that spot, from that exact spot where he was at. And so that wasn't terribly surprising when he, number one, rose up, because we've seen it a couple times this year. But then when he made it, I thought it was a pretty good culmination of sort of what they were after there.
The thing that struck me in that clip real quick here is... I swear I'm not doing a thing when I say this. He had the line about you're not going to get it all back in one possession. And boy, it sure seemed like Nebraska was looking for a 10-point shot.
We will talk about the Huskers, Josh. Why do you got to make everything about Nebraska? But you're right.
He said it. It went into my mind, and I'm like, oh, boy, that's diametrically opposite of what I saw.
I asked each of those guys at the press conference in between the games, because I did the math. The four guys they made available in between the game, it was Kalkbrenner, Farabello, I can't remember whatever it was. I did the math on it, and there was 30 some games of NCAA tournament experience, and it's an older group, you know. And so now Ryan Kalkbrenner's played in 10 NCAA tournament games in a Creighton uniform, and Trey Alexander's played in 8, and Bello's played in 8, I think. And, you know, Ashworth has now played in 4, 2 in a Creighton uniform. That's a lot of NCAA tournament experience. And so that kind of explains when they walk out there for the second overtime and they're like, this is fun. Let's just walk around. This isn't the biggest moment of our lives or anything.
Late night balling in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, just hooping with my bros. Ashworth will touch on that in a second. Let's do Jason Green first. Before that, here is one of the heroes from... I don't even know if you could call him an unsung hero, because every play that he made was gigantic. But here is Jason Green in the locker room after Creighton's win.
All right, here in the Creighton locker room post game with Jason Green. You ever played in a game like that before?
Not in a game as with such high stakes as that. I feel like the closest game I played that's been similar to that is probably the game just before this one in the round of 64. So, I mean, this was definitely a crazy game to be a part of, and I'm glad that I was a part of it.
All right, so take me to the putback dunk. Did you ever consider coming back down to the ground at one point? Okay.
As soon as it left his hands, I could kind of tell it was going to bounce off the front of the rim to this side, because I just got a knack for just knowing where the ball's going to bounce, and then I knew it was going to be in the perfect spot for me to go up and just put it back, because if I were to come down to the ground, it might have been a challenge at the rim with Dante or something like that, so I knew I had to get it in as quick as I could.
Did you know tonight would be a night where you would be a prominent guy, or is it more of a feel thing during the game?
After last game, Coach Mack told me that he would be using me a little bit more this game, since last game we needed a little bit more shooters in the game, and this game, I feel like I definitely stepped up to the role that I needed to. I had 9 rebounds, I think, and I feel like that's what they needed me to do, and I was able to get it done.
So you get 9 boards, and I think your previous high was 3.
Yeah, it was 3, so I mean, I tripled it, which is kind of crazy.
In an NCAA tournament game to go to the Sweet 16.
Go to the Sweet 16. I mean, it still hasn't even hit me yet, but I'm sure tomorrow when I'm thinking about it, I'm going to be like, what just happened? You know what I'm saying?
Maybe. Jason, thanks, man.
Thank you.
That's Jason Green, it falls into the long line of Creighton players. Just, I probably couldn't have came down with it, so I just figured I'd jump a little higher and dunk it.
I figured I'd just do more.
But he's right, though. to have the wherewithal as a guy who's playing in a game in, of that magnitude for the first time. And I mean, he's right. Because if he comes down and collects there, you know, Dante's going to be right there and it's going to be a lot harder for him, but he's processing all that as he goes up and slams it home and a perfect flush too. Right. I've seen a lot more awkward tip dunks than that before. That was so not awkward. And he just ripped that thing. He ripped it down. Pretty impressive. I mean, for him to do that in that game, it's crazy. And now a conversation with Stephen Ashworth, who I always appreciate talking to because he's got good perspective because he's an old guy.
There, okay. If you didn't say it, I was going to.
It's obvious, like, right? He's an old guy. And so you get to ask him sort of about process things and then, you know, just his perspective. And he's got a few really good lines in here, just about kind of what makes this group the way that they are and why you saw what you saw play out on Saturday night. So without further ado, here is Creighton point guard Stephen Ashworth.
All right, here in the locker room post game with Stephen Ashworth. This Creighton's going to their third Sweet 16 in 4 years. Stephen, you have another NCAA tournament game under your belt now. How's that one feel?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's sweet to be able to play in the Sweet 16. Something that I've never been a part of, something that I've dreamed of for years, and now to be able to go up against a team that's very talented and from the SEC in Detroit, it's going to be an electric atmosphere, and I'm just grateful to be a part of this team. This is exactly why I came here, so it's been awesome.
So when you start, you're getting great looks. You, everybody else get great looks to start, and they're not going down. You've been through those experiences before. Like, what does it feel like, especially in a game of that magnitude, it starts to set in finally where you're like, hey, they better start going.
Yeah, you definitely start to feel that. But at the same time, I mean, I've shot hundreds of thousands of shots, hundreds of thousands of threes probably. And so with the looks that I was getting, I knew that they were going to fall. To see that last one go in at the end of the half, I think was huge for just my overall confidence and the confidence of my teammates to keep trying to find me. And so that was big. But at the same time, as a shooter, you always are thinking the next one's going down. And that's the mentality you have to have. That's the mentality the great shooters have. And to be able to just keep it lighthearted and just let the guys know, hey, I'm going to knock the next one down. And I was able to do that, which I was really proud of.
Down 58-52 with 5 minutes left, and you guys are struggling, trying to find something. You're the guy with the ball in your hands. You pull up and make the shot. Like, that was a key one in the game. Like, take me through the process. If you remember it, take me through the – it was a long time ago. Take me through the process of it.
Yeah, so about an hour and a half ago, we drew that up. Coach called the play, and I knew that if my guy got hit by the screen, then the corner guy wasn't going to be able to help off of Baylor. And that was the game plan is on this, that specific play is if he overhelps, then I got the kick to Baylor, and I had one of those in the first half. If he doesn't help, then I've got the shot. And so I read it. I saw it. The big man was back, and I knew that I needed to let it fly. And the rhythm felt great off of the one bounce, and it was none but net from what I remember.
So how were you able to find your team in general, able to find that extra gear in double overtime? Like, what happened to eventually break that game open?
Yeah, I think there's just a joy to be playing more basketball together, and I could really feel it, just the joy of having more minutes, because those minutes felt gifted, if I'm being honest, because we were down six, we were down four, all those things, and the way that the team fought back, it was just fun to be able to continue to play more basketball together, and we conditioned really, really well. I don't think I've ever ran more in practices, preseason, during season, than I have here, and it's for moments like this so that our legs can be fresh and we can have that extra gear when we need it.
What happens to you guys mindset-wise, like in your heads, when Ryan Kalkbrenner pulls, you know, makes the three? It feels like that loosens maybe everything up, because you guys, you're in the three-point game with him after practice every day. That's like his spot. Like, how do you guys feel when you get to see one of those go, especially in a big game like that?
No, it's so fun. I mean, we play those lighthearted games after practice to try to put pressure situations on each other, and it paid off. And I mean, when he hits those shots, it's over. And that's what happened tonight. When he hit it, it was over. And then you got to add Jay Green's offensive putback. then I knew it was over. So just a super fun change of events right there to watch Kalk step up, big time shot, get a defensive stop, and then Jay Green with the putback dunk. It was electric.
Free throws too. I think you missed one. Just, I mean, kind of automatic, especially in late game situations. Like, you knew that they were going to have something left in the tank still. So making free throws was a big deal. Like, does that pressure go through your head as it's happening, or I guess how do you process stepping up to the line in clutch spots?
Yeah, I mean, when you're up in those moments, you really just have to fall back on your training and take yourself back to those places where you've made thousands of free throws before. And I think this team does a really good job, but Coach Mack leads it by every day at the end of practice. We've got to make a certain number in a row before we can leave the gym. And by doing that, I think it just gives you in a state of mind and a confidence that you want to be the guy that gets fouled to go step up at the free throw line. And I got confidence in every guy on this team stepping up to that line.
Detroit next weekend. Sound good?
Sounds great. See you there, Blue Jay Nation.
Thanks, Steven.
Thank you.
That is Steven Ashworth. Talking to Blue Jay Nation. Blue Jay Nation?
Connor, I don't mean to, like, gas you up or get you a big head. That one, that they were all really good. That one, he really said some stuff.
You think so?
Yeah.
What'd he say?
Just, hey, I want to play more basketball with these guys.
Yeah,
like,
I thought that was the most insightful thing.
This is a special group.
Yeah.
To them inside the locker room.
Yeah, that is consistent with everything we've heard about this team. And Mac talks about it all the time, how much of a joy it is just to coach this group in particular. And so when those really tight, intense moments come up, like, it feels like they go back to that. And they're like, It's not the pressure of not getting to play with each other anymore if it doesn't go the right way. It's just like, wow, I really like doing this, and I want to keep doing this. Probably splitting hairs a little bit. It ends up being the same thing, but I feel like it's a different mentality. It's a different mindset change, and that's where you see this group react to the things the way that they react to things. It's a pretty intriguing deal going on with that group right now, and I don't see why they can't win on Friday. It's tough, but I don't see why they can't give Tennessee a run. In,
gotta make your shots.
Who knows? Yeah, definitely have to do that. Who knows? They can go further beyond that. Oh, Josh, are we back to the light not working in here anymore?
Oh boy, it sure seems that way. Or maybe I was just oblivious. Both things can be true.
Yeah. Well, I don't see anything blinking in here. It's possible that the light blinked, but we can't see it anymore because it's now so bright in here, which is a good thing. We love the light. All right, we're going to talk about Nebraska coming up here in just a couple minutes because I know we haven't gotten to them yet. I have some takes on their one-and-done performance at the NCAA tournament in Memphis this weekend, and there's still so many things. We'll talk to Sam McEwen at the top of the hour as well. Quick phone call before we do that, though. Here is Random Mike. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hey, I enjoyed the interviews. Was in the locker room?
That was in the locker room, yes.
I did like your one leading question.
Oh, I lead you questions know, all the time, by the way.
But not waiting for somebody else to do, or looking for somebody else to do it. How did that one go again?
I don't know. Yeah, it's like I was just trying to keep the conversation going, and that was basically the best I could come up with.
Yeah, but it was actually really good. It was leading. But it was a good leading question.
Yeah, it feels like they're not waiting, you know, looking around waiting for someone else to do something.
Yeah, and you know, all the Nebraska and Creighton teams that were in the postseason, in the NCAA tournament, it seems like what they have in common is the coaches talk about how this is about as enjoyable a group to coach as they've ever had, that there's just a spirit and a love on the team for each other. Have you noticed that about every one of those teams?
Yeah, that is definitely true. Yes, they are a group. I think each of them are probably they're probably each close to, if not better than the sum of their parts, for sure, which is always the sign of a good team.
No doubt. Hey, before I forget, let me ask you this. Did you watch Carter Nelson in the state tournament?
No, I really didn't. I just saw the highlights of him dunking on everybody.
I mean, this guy, I mean, he can do stuff that Creighton and Nebraska men and women just haven't had. You know, there's they can take it hoop with just tremendous athletic and leaping ability. And I got it from a good source that if Nebraska's interested, he's interested in playing both sports at Nebraska. So we'll see what happens with that.
Basketball?
Yeah.
That seems a little far-fetched, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe.
Hey, Mendelsohn did it.
I mean, yes. Yes, that is true. But she was also a prized basketball recruit.
And volleyball recruiting isn't something where she's not even here anymore. I mean, she wasn't a factor in either sport,
right?
At least as a young player.
Yeah.
But what just strikes me is the luck that's involved in these, it's skill and luck. And in the women's game, when they beat A&M, I mean, it looked like they were going to lose. And there was a foul at the end. Did you catch that? That A&M fouled Nisley when they had the lead near the end of the game?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it was almost like an intentional foul. She was just all over it. Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was crazy.
Yes.
And that was a huge factor in them winning the game. And just like in this game, Dante, shooting that one-on-one and, where they win the game if he makes that, probably, right?
I think it gets very tough if he makes that and gets a second opportunity, yes.
Yeah, why isn't he even a position, to be fouled? It just strikes me how much luck is involved in winning championships, and it just goes either way.
Yeah, I tell you what, though. Maybe
a little unlucky.
I tell you what, though, Mike, you could look at it that way, or you could say, one team made less mental mistakes, and sometimes it's a war of attrition in that regard.
Yeah, well, you got lucky, but hey, is the MVP again the strength and conditioning guy at Creighton?
Yes, again. What I think he's won now his 30th game MVP of the year.
hey, that's great. I like the interview with what's his name, the kid from Miller North that had all the rebounds.
Jason Green.
I love what he said about he's got a knack for kind of knowing where the rebound's going to be, and that's a great thing.
That is a guy who's just completely bought into his role.
Yeah, and good coaching, to have him in there and let him know that, hey, it's great, and we'll see what happens. But, yeah, tough for the Huskers.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. See ya.
You bet.
Okay, so, this is actually a great transition over to Nebraska. Like, think about Jason Green. Jason Green is a stud in high school, right?
Correct.
He's got state championship accolades. He's the best player on, maybe he's in the shadow a little bit of Hunter during his time at Miller North, but he's, he has 1 year by himself. Like, he is a high school star, and he goes to Creighton and he redshirts, and then he gets hurt in his first real preseason camp. And it's a grind for him. I think he would have made that a real interesting conversation right off the bat this year. And maybe his story is a little bit different. But he comes back and he grinds and he works his way and he cuts out a role for himself. And he's like, this is what he's going to end up being. In 2 and 3 years, is Jason Green going to be, come in for 10 minutes and hopefully grab a couple boards and fouls and rebounds guy? Like, I think for his sake, hopefully not. Like, his role expands from there. But that's how it starts. And so he just accepted it. He just accepted his role, and he learned about his role. And he probably didn't know anything about rebounding before. But he's like, he sits there and he studies angles, so he's prepared for the situation that he encountered on Saturday night. And that's development. That's what Creighton has always done, and it's the bedrock of that program, and that's what they'll always do. It'll be the same thing next year with, I guess depending on what depth looks like with Jackson McAndrew or whoever else, or Ty Davis or whoever else comes into the program. So like that's the benchmark of what they do. So Doc texts him.
Hi Doc.
He says, up, Doc? So, that's what sets Creighton apart from Nebraska. Creighton usually has a team every year. As to where Nebraska has a new collection of guys. Camaraderie. You see what the Creighton players, in my opinion, isn't the same as what you see from Nebraska. I'll add this. There's just, and this is where it leads into the men's, the Nebraska men's conversation from over the weekend. Creighton, from a mental standpoint, it's both developed, but it's also inherent. It is also just like true about a person. And I don't know what the key factors are, but the mental makeup from Creighton on both sides is, like I said, the Creighton women's team is I would think that they are serial killers.
Yes.
Like, that's what you don't realize when you play them. It's like, yeah, they got a bunch of, all these girls, what do? They shoot threes? Yeah, they shoot threes, but they've been playing with the same group of people for 3 years, and they're stone cold killers.
They beat Caitlin Clark in a tournament, and they only want to go further than that.
They're so precise in what they do.
It will rip your heart out.
Right. It's the same. It's a similar thing with the men's side. That's not there yet at Nebraska. Not there yet.
There were times where it seemed like that was forming this year.
That has to continue to be developed.
Yes, it was inconsistent.
And so we'll talk about that and what, maybe there's a clue there, what ailed Nebraska on Friday night as they bow out of the NCAA tournament. We'll come back on 1620 The Zone.